Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the November 2025 edition of Poet Radio. Since this broadcast is happening on November 27th, happy Thanksgiving. My name is Chris Funkhauser, host of this program on WGXC since 2015, and our guest on tonight's show is Evelyn Riley, who I initially came to know via her work on a reading series known as Other Words, which she co-hosts in Great Barrington. Evelyn, who's recently relocated from New York City to the Hudson Valley, is a poet, scholar, and environmentalist. Her books include Styrofoam, Apocalypso, and Echolocation, Hiatus, and Having Broken R. Styrofoam reflects her engagement with eco-poetics and avant-garde experimentation. Hudson's own John Ashbery describes Styrofoam as a, quote, wonderful, mad, changing itinerary that might show us how to go about living in our, quote, I think that quote is now Evelyn, our infinite plasticity, prosperity, plenitude, unquote, and still have room for poetry. Great quote, by the way. I had known of her focus on eco-poetics, and looking at her website, evelynriley.com, I learned that her background is in science, and that she has been deeply involved with the climate activist group 350 NYC, and she's been an exhibit developer for several museums, including the American Museum of Natural History, the United States Peace Institute, and the Obama Presidential Center. I'm very pleased we could arrange this session as an interval within WGXE's year-end fundraiser, Wave on Main, on air, online, on Main Street. As many listeners may be aware, we are expanding the WGXE Catskill Studio, and we need your support. Help us grow the space in the coming year for community programming, workshops, in-studio performances, and more. Your donation to Wave Farms WGXC, Radio for Open Ears, contributes to the expansion of community radio on air, online, and on Main Street. Go to wgxc.org/donate now to make your contributions. As always, we will be grateful for your support. Honored with the program. Welcome, Evelyn. How are you?
Thank you, Chris. It's great to be here, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Is there anything else about your background that you would like to make listeners aware of?
I don't know. I think maybe I'd just add that I co-curate the series, the reading series in Great Barrington with Michael Gottlieb.
Right, right.
And we do that together, and it's at the public library. That's a very beautiful space, and it's free and open to everybody, so it would be great to see people there.
It is a great series, and listeners of this program might remember that I've broadcast a couple of those readings. They were at Familiar Trees before they were at the library, same series. And always great to get out to the Berkshires. All right, well, I know you brought some poems to read, and I think we'll probably just jump right into hearing you read, if that's all right.
Okay, no, I'm happy to. I brought something with me that's relatively new and not quite so directly what people might call eco-poetry. I've got a second thing that I can read a little later, which kind of chimes with that more directly. But this was inspired by a book by science, in that a friend of mine gave me this book by the physicist Carlos Rovelli called The Order of Time. He's written a lot of books for the general reader. They're very sophisticated, but really beautifully written and very readable. So that got me writing and thinking a little bit about time. And you'll see his kind of thinking pop up in this. It's called Long Preludes to the Disappearance of Time. And it does have a couple epigraphs. One is from Rovelli, which is, "In the frenzy of thermal molecular mingling, all the variables that can possibly vary do so continuously." And it also has one from the great poet Bernadette Mayer. "Like long preludes, I dream I don't want to get into this, but it's soothing and exciting like weathering." So this is Long Preludes to the Disappearance of Time. Worn, dirty, tacky plastic ceiling sticker constellations above this, my up-all-night keyboard station. What the day constructs, the night demolishes. the world being nothing but change, but still seeking some kind of pattern in the ceaseless clamor of desire and hunger, need too great to be born, or just too great to be born alone, feel it as a texture all around. Having been an animist as a child, isn't everyone an animist as a child? I can still perceive the vibrations. Dimmer switch detail deletion antibiotic resistant fever vision sends me out to pick up a prescription. A scurry across my ankle, mutual startle in the scaffold corridor. But walking can be an opening to the remarkable, streets as intervals, avenues as duration. Demolition brings us closer, Radis Norvegicus and Homo sapiens, shrewd, resilient, cosmopolitan cousins. The tiered network risk management psychopharmaceutical system hands a drug right over the counter, fixes one thing and exacerbates another. I'm quoting verbatim. Side effects include suicidal ideation, even in those with no history of depression, aka everyone, here in our quantum summa swoon soup of seeming, meaning, being, or rather becoming, for there is no is, only bumptious blips in the warping of space-time stratigraphy. Is this physics or God or history? One thing for certain, it's happening in the expanded present, which is this exact instant plus an interval that's neither past nor future, 15 minutes on Mars, 8 years on a nearby M-type star, millions of years in the Andromeda galaxy. Thus is the now. But back to recent sick, ordinary sick times sick, with meds in hand and a phrase that won't exit the brain. A musical fragment as perpetual inhabitant, thrumming away all day. Earworms usually go away on their own, Wikipedia says, but in some cases can be serious. Ways to get rid of them. 1. Listen to the whole song. 2. Distract yourself. 3. Chew gum to activate the motor cortex. Or just return to the room where the beloved is sleeping, attempt to recalibrate the neurons in the roar of the snore. Okay, give up and put on headphones again. Vibration is a form of material being, a means of transport in all its senses, maybe to the end of time, a place that knows no start or finish, in a quartet by Messiaen, written in a prison camp, Stalag 8A to be exact. And performed in the latrine where the music-loving Germans allowed just enough heat so players' hands didn't freeze. The same soldiers who loved to sing in the streets, Hymn to Joy, Margarita the Maiden. Type, what begins in music ends in stars. But what's up with this Paradiso stuff? Having been cast out by a cruel tribe, the capital P poet wasn't above a revenge. Got to meet everyone a second time, settle some scores. Maybe this is the definition of hell. Genealogies of harm passed down, heat-seeking missiles that damage us first on their way through an expanding universe where we dark listeners try to tune to enlarging channels. Attempting to cease the brain, I lie down once again in this planetary moon room of constellated sleep. Time has a direction only where there is heat to flow, from a state of less to more disorganization, this being the most elementary equation of the world. Chaos always increases. Hence we are falling apart together as I seek some soft synaptic relinquishment in a mind that blinks off computer screenishly. Dark puddles dappled by Dawn's fingers' daily damage revelation of trash all over the street. Such the unintended consequences of a life span, cycle, style, one of so many brutal words. Where is the help? At root, who cares? What is the drug, a friend writes? And with the day, even the dream of loss is lost. But the dream also causes disturbance, then maybe change. Takes too long always, and gradualism is a form of indecency, I think, as I return to my computer screen, propelled by the addiction to connection inscribed in our genes. Seems the local twerp is on the warpath again, certain he can fix everyone's incompetence. Thus the digital scum rises to the surface. So he thinks he can figure out the New York City building department, the elders murmur, passing on the stair? Isn't he aware there are things beyond our knowing, this being the metaphysics of city living? Still, there's always a counter-melody, a recurring figure in the window across the way. Today, a yawning cat. There can be imaginary friends in adulthood if you send a strand of acknowledgement across the air shaft. Floral, arboreal, fake lake, rodent abatement stations amid remnant pizza fragments. Yes, this is the park part. Take a seat among the exclamatory colors and attempt to make contact with what's happening in worlds that aren't obvious to us. The cosmic filaments and the quantum particles, the codependencies of the root nodules. Who's who within the microbial community of the discarded Coke bottle? In the subway, keeping my overdetermined, diffident distance, in the physical proximity force field of urban anonymity, where the poetry sometimes stabs me with shame for my art form. But today, the non-non-plus New Yorkers watch as a young woman gyrates around the center pole, tossing hair and hips while holding a phone for multiple takes. The doors open and a trainload of missives are delivered, bringing the upper and lower worlds back into synchronization, the interval of expanded present being about 12 seconds per station. The crowd that passes by in the course of a life, as in those early films of street scenes, everyone now dead, of course, including the grinning boy in the foreground. Still, the ghosts animate the air, a barrel-chested man darkened by the darkness of life. I'd forgotten him till a dream this morning. Then the internet said he too had disappeared. A stroke, a devoted wife, gave up tech for teaching, earns a like. First saw him with a book I admired on a bus going up the west side, shared some tenderness for a while, though tainted by my general anger then, mixed with his precipitous descents, falling off the earth one after another, or become earth rather. What is the most ecological form of burial? Turning to some pre-shades, too, undergoing their loss in a preparatory way, sitting on the couch, holding this one's hand, taking it as we walk down the street, touching people without their permission lately, but reaction not much anyway, silvering hair, gendered obscurity. "Hey, gray lady, I think you're an alien, but at least you're not a tourist," the man said while exploring the trash can on the corner of Elizabeth and Houston. Generation above disappeared. Generation below giving an animal shove as it rushes past. Knocks me a bit closer to the edge, but time haunts them too. Seeking to pay homage to intersecting instances, I return home with my collection of fallen leaves gathered from some of the city's more than 130 kinds of tree, meaning to place them on the altar of cross-species compost destiny. Not unpleasing the perfume of deterioration, the dying into the great recycling, but instead I start rummaging in a closet where the lost luggage of the soul is stored, related to, but not the same as baggage. Maybe in this container labeled miscellaneous, you never know what will come in handy. The opening of one thing can lead to other unfoldings. What, from that brown stick, this compound flowering? Turn on the little lamp as the afternoon darkens. Three temperatures of light now pretty standard. Ordinary, affordable, useful, common, and protective. I like the poetry of that, so I put it on repeat. Ordinary, affordable, useful, common, and protective. As a motorcycle roars down the street. I am here, I am here, I am here, it screams. Vibrations are a form of material being, while I'm still looking to construe some tissue of connection in this opt-out system of participation. Do you want to see things more warmly or coolly, or will you just remain a lukewarm visionary? Some say it's stories that heal us, but I can't pick them out of the tapestry, much less make out any sequence embedded in the overall delirium. Keep getting stuck in the margins instead, transfixed by all that obscures any kind of narrative thread. A broken toy in a clump of flowering grass, the vine threading through the chain-link fence, everything that's marginal, mangled, minor, and peripheral, but still seems to me the main meaning. Riffing off this over-caffeinated afternoon exhaustion propulsion perception, I manage another shift to be with the atoms and subatoms again, where even the stone is in reality a nexus to vibratory events. And I bump into your duration situation in which time no longer holds together as a coherent canvas. Lately, I've been taken with the word discern, as in to distinguish with difficulty, an admission of uncertainty, which is somehow calming. It's important to remember that some feelings may be mostly chemical, important to discern them. Having had the scales removed from my eyes at Northwell Ambulatory Medical, maybe things have just become too deceptively lucid. The halos around the signs vanished, and oncoming blasts of light muted. Is this a warmer or cooler temperature of seeing? Relative, cultural, habitable, grievous, memorial, and gravitational, time is the perception of change, says Aristotle. Something I measure in the present of my mind, says Augustine, or just one aspect of overlapping fields constituting the weave of what we call reality. Thus, I gravitate you. I reciprocal you. I conversant with you in these long relational preludes in which there is no variable T for time. Perhaps the emotion of time is what time is for us, says the lyrical physicist, as cold seeps in under the tent flap, ancient condition. Someone looks out to the rubble streets, ancient experience. A gang of boys passes in compensatory family formation, ancient configuration. And a dog gnaws on something in the corner of the scenery. But there is no scenery, only total devastation left in this iteration. Another version, a man says, having lived our life close to the poverty line, we don't get much sleep at night with all the development going on, the backing trucks and blinking lights. Another version, the woman who always remembers my name but doesn't presume I remember hers, the fraying hem of her pants and sleeves in a place she comes to for warmth and food, where I'm trying to discern a connection, human being to human being. Her name is Christine. Does the end of destruction end the impact, or do the shatterings radiate eternally as one catastrophe runs into the next cataclysm invertedly? So we write out of desperation, which can be a strange form of elation, intent on finding figures in the constellations and music in the random vibrations. We are such perverse, ecstatic animals.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy in that poem. I mean, right from the get-go, you sort of launch into it, and it's filled with activity. And I mean, just as a listener, I'm sort of flooded with it's obviously a sort of urban setting and everything. You have this activity and the observation of the activity and a sort of action reception of the world. And what's the process there? And where does that, then sometimes you drop in these, like, the syncopated language, and it's sort of, there's a different sort of rhythmic, quality to these parts. And I'm just curious, I'm still getting to know your work. I've known you for a while, but so I don't really know. I know some about your influences from reading your critical writing. Is this a New York school? Where is your baseline here?
I'm not sure it's New York school, but it's definitely a New York City piece of work, without a doubt. I did recently move full-time upstate, and I wrote this about a year ago, I think, knowing that that would be the case. And I'd lived in the city a very long time, and I just really wanted to write something saturated with the city, which I love. I was thinking a lot about vibration and music, but also vibration as kind of the the life source of everything at every scale.
Mm.
But part of the energy just comes from, I experimented with using these long lines that are a little hard to perform. You have to practice them because you have to launch them. And most of these sections has one or two of them, like the tiered network risk management psychopharmaceutical system is line. And you're not going to get through it unless you give it a pulse. And I think those lines, because they recur throughout the line, throughout the poem, they keep the poem from losing its propulsion, maybe, because you really have to, I even have to sit up a little bit as each one comes. But I also like the rhythms and even sometimes percussive rhythms in poetry. So I enjoyed that in working on this. On this one,
does that come like right away in the moment of composition, or do you sort of have to impose that later on?
I think maybe that it comes partway through, but it helps the poetry finally find itself. Like this was a big rambling mess, which is kind of how I write. I don't stop myself. I just, as long as it's going, I let it just keep going. But then there's a moment when I realize I really have to pull back and think, what is the shape of this and what's it really doing? And I think sometimes then I find something like, oh, this can be in sections, and they're mostly launched by these long lines that are kind of fun to write. And that gave it some shape and pulse that helped turn it into a real poem.
A real poem, yes.
Or whatever a real poem is.
No,
or maybe
no,
this isn't
one. I get it.
But
that's a famous phrase. Is that a real poem?
Is it? Is that a real poem?
Yeah, right.
God knows what a real poem is.
I liked hearing about earworms in a poem, because, I mean, anybody who's been like stalked by earworms, you know, you have to find a way out. And usually it does, you can do it pretty quickly, but I've had earworms that lasted weeks, right?
Yeah.
And even though earworms have imaginary songs, you know, like as a musician, you know, you might get some sort of rhythmic structure in your head, and then it's just like, well, go away, better start playing this or whatever. So that was cool. And also, when was the last time anyone heard the word twerp in a poem? That was very good too. Is that
twerp.
I think it was fairly, I don't know where it was in the poem, but I'm pretty sure you said twerp in there. And I was,
I did say twerp, yes.
Yeah, right. And that's it reminds me of like being in elementary school in the 70s or something. That was the kind of thing you could say as a swear word. You know, you call someone a twerp.
Maybe I'm aging myself with that word twerp.
What does it matter?
It's of an era.
I think, but that's okay. I mean,
I like mixing dictions, you know, just really casual and then very scientific or even kind of spiritual, elevated, religious. I feel like that's the nature of life, actually. So trying to find those register shifts.
I'm going to guess that Shakespeare used the word twerp, and probably more than once.
Wow.
So, I mean, where does a word like that come from? I always think it must be Shakespeare, right? Because it is a good word. I mean,
it's a good word. It's sound. It's a good sound for what it is.
It's almost polite. I mean, compared to what you
what
could
we
use,
say. Yeah,
compared
that's true.
To the synonyms of twerp are not so polite.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway, so it's funny, and when certain words will just strike you, you know, sometimes they're made up words, but that's not a made up word. It's just not a word we hear too often. So
I think of it as a 1950s, early 1960s word, maybe even TV word. I'm not really sure.
Right. Like Happy Days or something.
Like back in that vocabulary.
That's funny. Good. Yeah. I want to remind listeners that this is Poet Radio on WGXC, and we're with Evelyn Riley on the November 2025 edition. It just so happens that this is a WGXC end of the year fundraiser, so I'm going to pardon everything else at the moment and say WGXC's Catskill studio has become a grounding place for our station. We do have the Wave Farm studios out in Acre. We're developing this studio in Catskill, which has been in operation now for about a year and a half, I think. But we're expanding that situation. And with your help, we now have the opportunity to do even more community-based programming, workshops, and in-studio performances. So your donation to Waveform's WGXC Radio for Open Ears contributes to the expansion of this, and you can donate to be a monthly donor. You can send in a one-time donation. You need to do all of that via wgxc.org/donate. And this is radio for on air, online, and on Main Street in Catskill. So do that if you can. We'll be very grateful. And I want to go back to Evelyn Riley's poems. Is there anything else about this work that we need to draw out, or should we move on?
I think we can move on.
Great, great. Why don't we step into something else?
I can read. There is this word, ecopoetics. You know, people like to define things and decide there's different kinds of things and with boundaries around them. And a lot of my work ends up fitting into that. At first, I resisted that because, mm-hmm. to me, environmental thinking, it's a worldview. It's like, you know, everything to me, it's a definition of who we are and how we live in the world. It can be very urban. It can be very rural. It's not about going into the wilderness. It's about how we live as part of nature. And so it's my view of life. So in some ways, I feel like all poetry fits into that. Nonetheless, I don't mind that people kind of embraced it, and a lot of students are really interested in
sure.
it. And there's a lot of very interesting writing, you know, in what now is called the environmental humanities, some of which I read. So, you know, it seems to have some aliveness. And so, you know, I've been happy to see that over the years.
To address this idea of eco-poetics, it seems all right to me to put a name on it. I mean, because usually it denotes this, the planet is dying. We need to do something about it. My poetry is dedicated to contributing to this awareness. And, you know, I mean, poetry in itself, who knows what it can do. But, you know, the idea that a group of people, you know, can joining together with our, you know, a widespread sort of articulation, you know, then maybe people will start listening, or at least they have a framework to work with, right? I never even thought to question the labeling of eco-poetics. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. and it's not really that new, right?
At this point, maybe Jonathan Skinner coined it 20 years ago, maybe even longer ago. He had a journal called Ecopoetics. You know, an amazing range of writers can fit into that envelope because our view of nature is just embedded in every word we use, even the word nature, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this whole history of supposed nature poetry. You know, what does it mean to use these words now? Because the world has changed and the world's changing rapidly. It's not all about the disaster, but it can be. But, you know, the way we think and speak has to, it's part of being connected to the world. It's part of the world we're in.
Mm, right.
So if you're awake to that, just like one wants to be awake to many things.
Mm. Right, right. You know, I totally understand it, but I was just, I think it is relevant and important.
For me, it started because I wrote a book called Styrofoam, which really started from an aesthetic interest that I'd seen these artworks by an artist named Rudolf Stingel at the Whitney, and they were all made of styrofoam, and he had walked across them. It's as if he laid them on his studio floor and had paint thinner on his boots, and they had footsteps in them, and they were incredibly beautiful. And so I started writing this poem called Styrofoam, which is a beautiful, lightweight, snow-like, mysterious thing. But then as writing about it, the problems with the materials just
it doesn't
come in.
It doesn't degrade, right?
It never degrades.
Yeah.
And it, you know, So that started flooding in, and I thought, well, this is okay. It can be about aesthetics and about ecology and all of this. And it was fun and interesting to write, and very worldly in a way. So that got me started, and people started approaching me for this dialogue about eco-poetics. And then I realized I'd just embrace it. So anyway, I think I'll read something a little bit, not out of Styrofoam, but a more recent book that connects to some of those. This book came out about a year ago. It's called Having Broken R. That's having broken, comma, R, as in we are. There is a short poem titled that I could read at the end if we get to that. But I think first, we may not have time. I'm going to read a series called Sleeping with Trees. The gates to nothingness open an eighth of an inch each night, framed by trees that grow exuberantly. Among the leaves, blooms of durable insects. A limb reaches out into the emptiness, seeking to make contact, then grasp. You study all this from your bed through your night goggles, the world that continues without us. The drawers of thinking won't close, so overflowing with non-disposables and the ambushes of memory. Nothing put away stays in place. The sound of no longer needed body parts dropping to the ground. You take a tiny rake to clean up this mental landscape, a sort of curator gardener, paying your respects to the wakefulness of trees. Not just any plant, the most sensitive of plants bends to your touch, your presence. How could it be otherwise, Mimosa, waking up to the weeping of flower heads and larvae, the usual worm chatter and dissonant turf? Trying to listen differently, seeking a new kind of intimacy, to be close as commas, like grass, Rousseau's grass in particular. With each new blade I encounter, I say to myself with satisfaction, here is yet another plant. Cold, hard-working birds drop out of a sky ghosted with the colors of their disappearance. You lay a torn sweatshirt on the pyre, a few poems in an empty container of Roundup, intone some prophecies based in statistics. Dear William Blake, my flower is sick and regressing to the kingdom of the elements. Dear Evelyn, I think you meant to address this to Immanuel Kant, for whom a flower is an example of free beauty. Why this pale bloom matters so much you don't want to remove it from the vase the condescending man said was made for the tourist trade and thus without value except as a nice family keepsake, unlike those standing row upon row in the Museum of Classical Mayhem. Sleeping with moon-enameled branches and silent pulses of missing insects, spears of cheap pillow down set up a battle in one ear. While the trees persist in their refusal to be individuals, the rhizomes that aid and abet them spread. All this with the only light coming from the crack under the door in the common hallway. You remember the words, first reconcile with the neighbors. This is the only true and hardest prayer. Sipping cosmic energy through light green straws, at the same time digging toes into the timelines of the dead, the trees create a disturbance that is not really disturbing to the resting places of the naturally interred, while someone's endless pleading, another's eternal worry, roam the hunting grounds of the villi and microvilli. The ceiling nods in concert with the heads of dried grass rattling open your dream just as an imaginary spring was coming into bloom again. But you live in the age you live. The sound of generations beat down on your head, using it as a drumskin of accusation. All that is broken, broken, broken. Out of the tree cradling plastic, a forecast of sea. Above it, a stellar umbrella unfolds for the 14 billionth time. Somewhere, a reckoning ticks, but you aren't listening as you clip the eyebrow hairs that curl down into the eyes of the beloved. the slight chill of the word ethics, why other stories were needed, tales of transformation and forgiveness, something to help people out. The notion of the soul as interiority, what crap tonight? The trees multiply the extensions and extensions of extensions as darkness descends into the holding pens where metallic blankets cover the ankles of sleeping children. The night is loud with the becoming of insects, the silence of plants digesting another day's worth of star material along the fence lines. Into the war poems of the environment comes the bright clamor of the rich putting on their armor. You get up to clear some space on your desk of doubt, looking for a definition of love you lost somewhere. Chains of ordinary kindness self-perpetuating in thin air, a force that emanates radially. Now creatures free from bilateral being are entangled in a canopy of forest thinking drenched in the language of rising seas. Octopi and other cephalopods offer such appealing methods of propulsion and perception, you are almost carried off by them. But the wind is picking up, and you're afraid of losing power. You open the windows to feel the wet unleafing of fixed positions, other planetary sympathies. The iterations of the leaf repeat the verbiage of the foliage imperfectly, and the flowers on the wallpaper recite a mantra of misalignment, repetition that speaks differently. Every bloom brings a new structure of feeling into the room. Each twin sleeps under a different shoulder in the womb of dreams. Things that close in order to open again, revisitations of old spiritual possessions. So what has been the nature of your participation, the method of your self-dispersion? Have you taken part in disruption when disruption was needed? What limits have you set for your explorations? What floor for your excavations? Why just there and not further? Why are these questions so unnerving? Is that why we are both sweating and shivering? Tell us about your position in the scheme of ecosystem services, as opposed to, say, these trees. No need to worry. This is all just for informational purposes. Now diagram the nodes of your connectivity. Don't forget the burrs on your pants today, the jet streams and the rafts, the stowaways riding the plastic ropes of the oceans. Snow takes the place of leaves among things that fall inaudibly. All that happens but is unheard. The desire to live inside a picture, streams and mountains, rocks and gorges, this is the aesthetic of detachment. Trees are to landscape as books to decorating, a poet says, obscene. This is the environmental aesthetic. Another brings your attention to the friends admiring the snow in an era of general depravity, the aesthetic of being together in violent times.
Yeah, I love that poem, and I almost want to think of it as a protest poem, but it's really kind of a provocation. Having read it before tonight and always looking for a thing, I connect with this poem, as you, I think you might remember, I do tree work too.
Yes, I do remember.
Yeah, right. So I have a sort of, I'm inside the world of trees sometimes as an artist, and I mean the trees are you know, central, and the perception of the trees is central to the poem here. I'm not trying to ask you what the purpose of the poem is or anything, but it does seem like there is an urgency.
Well, maybe first I'll say is I do remember your tree work, and it was at the bookstore called Familiar Trees.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
A really wonderful title. And in fact, when Michael Gottlieb and I started doing the series in Great Barrington, it took place at this very wonderful bookstore called Familiar Trees. And Chris, you did a piece with two laptops, if I remember, each having, I don't know if it was the same tree or two different trees.
Different ones, yeah.
But I think they were video because they moved.
Yes.
Right? They moved. And there was a soundscape while you read words.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very much a communication with audience, trees, and sound. There was another soundscape, if I remember.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I appreciated that. I think, I'm trying to remember really what got me. I started writing this because I'd read a book called something like The Philosophy of Vegetal Life. You know, I can go there.
Uh-huh.
I can barely read these things, but I still enjoy reading them. And it made me really think about, I thought, oh, I would like to think about the plant world for a while and see what language comes out of that. Hmm. But it was too huge for me.
Right.
And somehow when I thought of the trees at night, and that even if you're not outdoors, somehow you're with them. They're living with you, and they're such amazing creatures. And it's both intimate and emotional, but also mysterious, that I was able to start writing these. And then I just enjoyed thinking of it. And I think you're right. It's not an activist poem. This one isn't quite going there. It's more meditative, but also emotional, I think.
It's very subtle, the kind of thing I was taking away from it in terms of like how this is functioning as a motivator of some sort. You at the end, you know, you directly go for the, what was the line there? Something about the era of general depravity. And, you know, we don't have to go too far to imagine what that's about. You know, just look at the, you know, deforestation of the rainforest and, you know, all the studies on climate science. And, you know, we know what that's about. And then you turn that right around and talk about the power of, the aesthetic of being together. Right. So we have this, as humans, it seems like, yes, there is this, but what about the aesthetic of being together with, you know, the natural world or something like that? And it'll be interesting to see what happens after you've been upstate for a while, because, you know, there's a lot more trees than people.
Yeah,
New York City, there's way more people than trees. I mean, this is almost like a flip-flop for you.
And
how do you, you know, the one thing is like, how are you going to avoid Lyme disease? You know, if you're communing with the trees.
Right, and ticks are doing really well at the moment. Yeah.
I was connecting with this on a number of levels, but also curious to know more about it.
You know, I should credit, you know, the last section of this, it references two other poems, and one is by Peter Cully, and the other is by Derek Mahan. And the very end, which says something, another, it says, you know, there's a poet, and another poet brings your attention to the friends admiring the snow in an era of general depravity. That's from a poem by Derek Mahan, who I think was Scottish, called The Snow Party. And it really is about, I think it might be based on a Chinese landscape painting, but and I'm not sure about that because it's been a while. But it's a group of friends, you know, and the whole, you know, subject of friendship in Chinese writing and aesthetics is so big. And they're getting together and there's this incredibly beautiful snowfall. But the political situation in that historical era is completely appalling. So to me, part of this is how do we be? And what's our connection to beauty? And what does it mean to have aesthetics? And to do it together as friends while we're all living through the same historical eras? I don't have the answers, but I think part of this is just trying to probe that.
Right. And I noticed that the end of this poem contains a number of questions. And then coincidentally, the last poem you read also is raising the questions at the end. So, I mean, I think that's a good tactic. If you'd say you don't have the answers, at least you have the questions and you offer that up to, you know, the audience as, you know, to check in with themselves about the, whatever, the ramifications of what you're talking about, where they are, where they're at with it.
Well, sometimes poems that assert answers are are very annoying.
Yeah, hard to receive.
Hard to receive. Well put.
Yeah.
Well put.
But very, very interesting. And I will check in with you down the line about how, you know, how this restructuring of your visual world. I mean, that in itself, right? The tree is, we don't need to go off on, you know, all the different dimensions of trees. But certainly the fact that, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, there was thousands of shades and shapes of green all around us all the time. And now you look out, oh, it's dark out right now, but you know what I mean. Now there's none of that. And so you have a, it has to have an effect. We have to put our, I mean, I think it's very healthy to put ourselves in relation to the, I mean, to all of it, actually, you know, not just the trees, but
I think we have to.
Yeah,
I
right.
think it's like part of our problems is the failure to do that.
Yeah, well, of course, the separation,
right.
And the separation right. of right. humans and not. We are, again, we are here on Poet Radio with Evelyn Riley. We have another 10 minutes or so of the show. I just want to remind everybody that we are in the part, WGXC is in the midst of our end of the year fundraiser, and investing in local community spaces and media is more important than ever right now. Obviously, we all know about the attacks at media, and especially freeform media have come under. Wavefarm, WGXC, Radio for Open Ears, is committed to providing a platform for independent perspectives and creative expression in New York's Upper Hudson Valley. And in 2026, we're working to ground our WGXC Catskill studio as a nexus point for our community to create, learn, and come together. And we need your help. So go over to wgxc.org/donate. To make a contribution, if you can. We thank you in advance for doing so, and you know, look forward to bringing you expanded content as this Catskill studio gets developed. All right, then. We're coming towards the end of the program. I did want to, you know, I thought I would put in a little plug for this Other Influences. This is an anthology called Other Influences, An Untold History of Feminist Avant-Garde Poetry. It was published last summer, and I've been trying to coordinate a show that is dedicated to this, a volume edited by Marcella Durand and Jennifer Firestone. But it does it as an essay that you wrote, and it's interesting. It's very well, it's very revealing of your development as a writer and a thinker, and the aesthetics you really work with. So, when I got to read this, I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. Now, I mean, I learned from it. I guess that's what one of the reasons why we have books like this is to circulate the knowledge and we read them to learn this. But of course, it picks up on. The title is "Finally, We Are Allowed to Write, But the World is Dying," and this is from an Alice Notley poem. So you go from there, and you sort of take that on and expand the concept in your own way. But you talk about your influences, and I thought that was very, very interesting to know that you're to get a sense of your touchstones. And we don't need to review all that online. I just did think it was. If you don't know this anthology, The Other Influences, I'm going to recommend it to you, and I hope in 2026 to bring you an episode of our show that looks at it a little more closely. So anyway, and there was an event this past summer at the Flowchart Foundation where the launch of this book happened, and it was beautiful. So I know you were there, and I know you're part of this whole production.
Yeah, you know, this is a wonderful book, I would say, that Marcella and Jennifer did. Its title is so huge, An Untold History of Feminist Avant-Garde Poetry, that it almost implies it's a scholarly anthology. But it's not. It's much more personal than that. And really, it came about because they co-taught a class at the New School where they would invite women poets, mostly in New York, you know, to come in and read their work and talk about it. And they realized that growing out of doing that, they could put together this book of essays, really about people's influences. And so it was really interesting for me to think that through, because I knew that I came from a non-academic background and a scientific background, and I also started writing late. So I did end up writing a little bit about my trajectory and about women poets and women essayists who really helped me find my way, who now are kind of my elders. And I talk about Rachel Blau Duplessis, who wrote these pivotal books of feminist essays, The Blue Studios and The Pink Guitar, that at an earlier point in my development were just very important to me, kind of rethinking literary modernism, which, you know, you come to and there's just these big rocks, you know, of Ezra Pound and Eliot and even later on Zukofsky, all these people, mainly men, writing these enormous poems, and that can seem very daunting. So her essays really helped kind of me feel like there could be a world I could participate. And I also wrote about Laureen Nydecker, who I think is such a wonderful, wonderful poet.
Definitely.
And a great example of someone who didn't have a big career and whose work might have disappeared, but didn't, because it was such great work. And I think it's important for all poets to hold on to those examples.
Mm-hmm.
And the work is so beautiful and wonderful. And I also wrote about Joan Retallack, whose book, The Poetical Wager, I also read at a very pivotal early point. And she's just very philosophically informed essay writer. She's also a poet, but whose view of feminism, I think, is very welcoming to participation by anyone, whatever their gender definition might be. But she thinks there's qualities of the feminine that are liberating for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was a wonderful way to write. And we did have an event in August. She didn't contribute an essay to this volume, although she was definitely invited, because she's very busy writing new essays, which we want to have in our world. But she wrote a wonderful quote for the back of it. And we did an event in Hudson at Flowchart Foundation, talking about her work and her importance as an essay, as a influence this summer. So that was wonderful to do. And I was so glad we were able to do it. So, yeah, I think it's great if you could have a radio show based on this. There's so many really wonderful writers. Anne Waldman's essay in here is amazing.
Yes, yes.
It is remarkable. But many others are as well. So,
well, we're lucky that Marcella is, well, her mom lives not too far away. So we can,
that's true.
All we need to do is coordinate all that. Of course, coordinating poets, not always so easy, but we'll, I'm going to make an effort to do that, because I love the book. I'm glad that it came out. And yeah, it's great that you're in it. I do think, let's see. Do you have a poem you'd like to kind of close out with? There, the reading series is ongoing, right? It's just, is it every month?
Yeah, the Other Words series now at the Public Library in Great Barrington is generally on the last Saturday of the month at 4:00. However, because it's the last Saturday, we won't be having it in November or December because of the holidays.
Right.
But in January, we will have a reading actually by my co-host, Michael Gottlieb, who has a new book of poetry coming out, and by Cynthia Zarin, who is a poet and a novelist. So that'll be our next event.
All right. Great.
Yeah.
Highly recommended, ladies and gents out in the Berkshires. So again, Evelyn Riley has been the guest on Poet Radio this afternoon, this evening, this morning, wherever, whenever you're listening to it. And we, don't forget to participate in our fun drive if you can. WGXE is Yeah, expanding the Catskill studio. You've been hearing about this. You'll hear about it again. Anyway, I'd like to thank Evelyn for taking the time to get together, and we'll close out with...
I have a shorter poem I can read. I'll read the title poem from this book, Having Broken R.
Great.
Having Broken R. Grief moves from box to box. Calendars, emoticons, screenshots of a pangolin and a bat. Having become the animal, I am... I'm going to start over again.
Great.
Grief moves from box to box. Calendars, emoticons, screenshots of a pangolin and a bat. Having become the animal I am, among the float of heavy bees. Every living thing has its natural history. Tree leaves, mutual need, insect calipers measuring out probabilities. The wind is full of shifting gears, which the overlords use to exert their usual machinations. Financial instruments, public relation messages. There aren't enough scare quotes in the world for this. Hope in the presence of other people I once took as a provisional definition. Amend, repair, revise, recognize. That kind of incantation. But an incipient way of thinking links us to an unsecured network. Having been brainwashed as children, we must suspect ourselves always. Dogged associations such as a clearing in the woods closing at the rate of your own aging. Your arbitrary name sound wobbling in the same breeze that makes it possible to turn over a new leaf definitively. You can only step into the fray. See what happens in the ecosystem of response. This may be prophetic pragmatism. How do we do together? Thus it's hair-raising when ancestors grope mystically at my scalp. Union soldiers become Indian hunters. Protestant ministers, indecipherable women, cause permanent itchiness. Past futures and future futures. Moth touchdowns have me putting up antennae again as delicate landing pads open under a fingernail of moony lyric impulse. Endless exploratory probings, the inflammation of unpeaceful centuries, the respiratory systems, not breathing well at all, these forests, these streets.